What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. Drantzer, of course, a Canucks insider who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We're live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. A big show today, as always, on a Wednesday. Crossover coming up in just a few minutes here with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal, and, of course, Jason Bukla at 1 o'clock live from Vegas for Bukes as the NHL draft gets going on Friday. Or at least I assume he's in Vegas. I just kind of made that up, but I bet he's probably there already. So lots to get into today, and you can get your texts in. And, you know, we're now only 5 days away from free agency opening on Monday, July 1st. And again, we'll be on the air right as it opens at 9 a.m. here on Canucks Talk, 9 to noon on Monday. And still the Canucks, obviously they got the big Filip Hronek deal done as an RFA, and that answered a big question, took up a big chunk of their potential salary cap space as well, but still very much sitting here. You know, none of their pending unrestricted free agents have signed. Based on the reporting, and we can talk to Rick Dhaliwal about this, but it doesn't seem like anything is particularly close at the moment either. You never know, right? That could always change. But as we stand here right now, it looks like the Canucks could, A, have a lot of work to do on July 1st, but the flip side of that is, B, they could have a lot of space and a lot of options and a lot of flexibility to use to get that work done come July 1st.
For sure. Flexibility, right? The downside of where the Canucks are positioned is there's so much uncertainty about the depth chart, what this team's going to look like, how they fill significant needs, like multiple top nine forwards, multiple bottom six centermen, certainly at least one. And then also, of course, the situation with the defenders, right? You need at least two and probably three defensemen. So that's six pretty important pieces right there that the Canucks are, you know, they're question marks on the whiteboard when you sort of look at what the Canucks have to fill in on their roster. And yet, you know, for all that uncertainty can be unnerving, especially as the clock ticks inexorably toward 9 a.m. Pacific time on July 1, the fact that they're here with flexibility means that it's not something necessarily to dread. Now, that's not to say that it's not going to like be challenging, that there is absolutely a world where things unfold poorly for Vancouver here, but when you have that level of cap flexibility, opportunity, I think is like has to be at the forefront of how we're thinking about this, right? The Canucks have something like $9.5 million for five or six skaters plus a goalie, right? And with Seelovs being an RFA, no arbitration rights, I think you feel pretty confident about him being a backup. Yeah, sure, there's some offer sheet risk or some other things to manage there, but for the most part, you're probably feeling pretty good about your ability to get Seelovs locked up under $1 million. So, you know, $18.5 million for six skaters. And yeah, one of them needs to be a huge piece. One of them needs to be a top four defenseman.
Yep.
But even then, you probably come back to it with $7 or $8 million for four guys that are like, hey, third pair or like a 4 or 5 defenseman, a third line center, you know, a sort of an additional middle six forward. Like, that's achievable. That's absolutely realistic and achievable. So I do think as much as things get nervy at this time of year, right, everyone's stomach will be in knots, both among Canucks fans and probably some Canucks players, pending UFAs,
sure.
Maybe some of their agents, maybe some of Canucks management.
Well, I think even if you're, and a lot of the Canucks UFAs have put themselves in really good positions to get
absolutely
good contracts, but it's still stressful to see, okay, where am I going to go?
Totally.
What's the fit going to be? All of that. Even if you're, you know, really excited about the payday you're going to get, there's still an element of stress there.
Well, especially because a lot of them seem to really want to be here. And yet it's pretty clear that the Canucks are holding a pretty firm line.
Yep.
So you're sort of faced with some pretty tough choices, right? Do I, you know, and I don't want to like frame it the way that sports fans sometimes do, where it's like, he took the money versus like, he wanted to be here and left money on the table. By the way, every free agent that signs with every team left money on the table, right? Like for the most part, because these decisions are complicated, right? Not just three-dimensional, but multi-dimensional, right? Family considerations on and on. But sort of navigating that is arduous, right? Gut-wrenching for players, just like it's going to be gut-wrenching for Canucks management to look at this roster, you know, to look at Myers, Zadorov, Joshua, a bunch of guys that this team loves that play big roles for this team as they had one of their most successful seasons in franchise history, and, you know, be willing to walk away if the money doesn't make sense. You know, I do still come back to that DeMello deal, right? Like, that DeMello deal for me was just this big blinking red light, just reminding you that, okay, DeMello, more consistent defensively and 3 years younger than Tyler Myers. Fair. But Tyler Myers, more historically productive offensively.
Bigger.
A lot bigger, a lot more hits, a lot more physical. And DeMello didn't have a great playoffs. Well, Myers was in a hard match against McDavid in the second round, and the Canucks did a better job limiting McDavid's production in that round than any other team that the Oilers face in the playoffs, right? So my point being that, do I think Myers is going to touch $5 million or flirt with $5 million per year on a four-year deal? Probably not. But if he was to prioritize raw market value on his next contract, do I think his next contract would be in a totally different stratosphere than Dylan DeMello? I struggle to imagine that. So, you know, even there, right, it's like this, you couldn't find a guy who'd be more motivated to stay, all things being equal. But this is just a reminder, especially as you get to the open market, especially as you get to an open market where, you know, there's an additional, fair bit of additional cap space in the system beyond which
and not just additional cap space, but I think additional appetite to spend from a lot of teams. Right. And I think it was
Utah,
you know, Chicago, San Jose, Chicago. Yep. I also think another factor, we talked about Detroit yesterday doing the Jake Wallman deal. And I think I was listening to Halford and Brough this morning, and one of them said, you know, there's basically this trio of Eastern Conference teams, Ottawa, Detroit, Buffalo, that are all desperate to make the playoffs, right? They've been on the cusp of taking that step perennially for years now, and none of them have done it. And I think they're going to be very motivated, right? So I think it's this perfect storm of extra cap space. And just, again, we talked about this, like, how many teams are not motivated at all to spend? It's a very, very small number.
Well, and I also think you can put Ottawa and Buffalo in a slightly similar category, in that where lots of teams will get to free agency and be like, ooh, he's 32. Like, you know, like that, that classic HR meme, right? Where it's like, oh, he's a really good top four defenseman. Like, hey, because he's 29, but then the guy's 31 and it's like calling HR, right? Like, for really young teams where it's, you can see the talent, you can see the outline of what could be, and yet the team has struggled to level up, has struggled to get there. You know, the fact that a Tyler Myers is 34. The fact that he's been through the battles,
et cetera. Yeah.
Right. The fact that those guys, Marchessault, right? The fact that those guys are older, have been through it, have been deep in the playoffs, like, that veteran experience is actually more appealing in some ways, most likely, to those teams as they put together their shopping list.
All right, we've kept them waiting long enough. Let's start it up. Here it is, the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dhali on Check TV. You can watch them 10 to noon, Monday to Friday on Check TV. The crossover is brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles, and where the players go. Rick, Donnie, how's it going, guys?
Good, guys. You? Great stuff. Great stuff.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you for being so positive. I think this is the last crossover of the year, fellas, because I'm not on the show next Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
And you guys were at Dev Camp anyways. So this is it. This is the season finale of the crossover.
Wow.
So a lot of pressure is on you two to perform here.
Wow. Donnie,
we'll do our best.
We'll do our best. We'll do our best.
How much time off do you guys get, by the way? You're off the whole summer. You're off all the time.
You're off all summer.
We got July and August off.
There's a rumor out there that we might have a couple of weeks off.
Taylor's agent is the best in the biz.
Drance gets all summer off, but I take a week off, and then I'm back, like, rotating around the morning show and stuff. So I'm here. I'm just not on this show. But I have to go to work, unfortunately.
All right.
You got to hire Donnie's agent.
We're available if you need us.
That's true. I got to get Donnie's agent. All right, let's start.
It's a pleasure working with you.
Donnie's agent is Donnie. I got news for you.
Oh, he's got an agent, a really good one. Top of the Top of the top.
Who's
of the top.
Who's more connected to agents, me or you? It's not even close.
Yeah, I know a lot of agents, but I don't have one. Like, Drance has got one. You got one. I think Bruff and Ruff got one. Yeah. I don't have one.
You got to get on that, Rick. Talk to one of your agent pals. Get a good agent, man. Okay, speaking of agents and speaking of your conversations with agents, Rick, we're now 5 days out from free agency opening here. What's the latest you're hearing on the Canucks, their potential targets, their all of their unrestricted free agents that they still haven't signed?
Well, I just want to concentrate on Zadorov and Joshua. Okay. Those are the two big ones for me. I really do believe that. Like, you know, Donnie and I talk about the size element. I really do believe that Rick Tocchet does not want these two guys to go. I mean, a lot of what made them successful in the playoffs, they were hard to play against. These two, Dakota led the NHL in playoffs in hits heading into Game 7, I think after Game 7 too. Zadorov, we know how he got under the skin of other teams and big hits as well. Dan Milstein telling me today they will remain open-minded and they will not rule anything out till July 1st when it comes to Zadorov's future. There have been no talks, still no talks, but Milstein is hoping for a final offer if the Canucks can clear up some cap space. This tells me the player really wants to return. It tells me there's hope. Milstein waiting right up till July 1st is very interesting for me because there hasn't been a lot of talks. And the fact that he's going to be patient, he could walk. Like, Milstein and Zadorov could announce any minute that we're going to July 1st. They're not doing it. That tells me a lot. That tells me that, you know, they want something. They want something to happen where he can possibly come to Vancouver. Now, when it comes to Joshua, I'm not hearing anything positive. This is a player that is clearly, for me, outpriced himself in the market. I'm told that Canucks will not do a silly number on Joshua. We're hearing some big numbers for Joshua that he can get on the market over 3.5, 3.7, even some people saying 4. Canucks aren't going to go there. They're not going to do that. They believe they develop Joshua and they can develop another player like him. Time will tell. As always, I'd like to say this as well. We can only report as reporters on what we're hearing today. Things can change in 2 hours, 1 hour with one phone call. But right now, just not hearing anything positive, progress or anything with Joshua.
The other thing that happened today, and Rick made us aware of this, is interest in or possible interest in Jeff Skinner. There's talk out of Buffalo. He's got 3 years left at $9 million per. Talk about an OEL-type buyout there, which would be really expensive for the Sabres, but would early on, at least, during that penalty, give them some cap room, and whether or not Jeff Skinner would be a fit in Vancouver, maybe alongside as a left winger, alongside Elias Pettersson. We had Ray Ferraro on the show, and he didn't shoot that down, but he felt that wouldn't be a fit, even though Jim Rutherford is the GM who drafted Jeff Skinner back in 2010 with Carolina. But Ray just felt he's not enough of a Rick Tocchet type player for him.
I can see that. I can see that for sure. Yeah. And I think that's a complication that the Canucks are going to have to be careful with, especially because we saw with Kuzmenko, right? You can be as talented as you want. You can fit in well on power play one. You know, Pettersson and you can have great chemistry, but it's not going to be enough. You know, like it's not enough to be productive. You also need to be on the ice, right? Like you also need to be able to do some of what this team needs. And that's sort of where I think the Joshua question's so interesting, Rick. You know, with this guy, I mean, yes, he shot a hot percentage, but I mean, what? How many combined feet from the net were his goals, right? Like he is always in the blue paint. Like I don't think he's going to be a regression candidate like a normal guy. We saw the penalty killing, you know, he didn't really play at the net front. He only really played top 6 minutes in the playoffs and he was productive. I mean, for me, he's the sort of guy who profiles like a guy who could maybe do more and sort of justify a silly deal. And he's kind of 1-on-1 on this market. Like, you were saying you think $4 million is a silly number, Rick. Like, I don't even think that's silly for this guy.
He's going from $800,000.
I get it, but like
it's just $800,000 to $4 million is, in a lot of people's eyes, silly.
I mean,
but a possibility.
It's surprising. I get what you're saying, Rick. It's surprising, but I also think that there's a chance he's worth it, right? That there's a chance if you sign him for 4 years at $4 million and he ends up, you know, doing what he did this last season, has chemistry with Connor Garland, there's a chance you're really happy with that deal.
Okay, here's one for you. The Canucks give him 4x4, and then he goes backwards next year. Doesn't score 18 goals, and he's stuck at 9. Imagine the heat on that guy in this market and the heat on the Canucks.
You can say that about anybody, though.
Oh, okay.
Like, a decent deal.
But that's the great unknown, Donnie. We don't know if he's going to get back to 18 goals or not. Hey, listen, I'm a big fan of the guy. I mean,
I don't think you are.
Doesn't sound like
no,
you're
I
right.
am. I mean, no, but there's. I'm looking at it from both sides. You know, the agent's obviously going to have one hell of a market for this guy on Monday. Let's be honest. I mean, we've already heard teams like Chicago, Toronto. Boy, I think when you look at Toronto, what's the number one complaint every year? Not enough playoff-type guys in the playoffs. And this guy and Zadorov would help Toronto, you know, rectify that problem. But, I mean, he's going to have a wonderful market, and great on him. And, Donnie, he's going to do what 99% of the public does, and you and I did, and everybody in the media. If you get a big raise and a big contract, you're going to take it. And why wouldn't
Well, you know all about that. But let me ask you this, Thomas. Let's get your take. But Patrick Helvin, was that a slip-up after the season was over? He made himself available. Like, you know, they all did. All the management and coaching types and players made themselves available after the playoffs were over. And he said, Patrick Helvin said something to the effect of, our job is to find the next Dakota Joshua. And that made me feel that, well, was he supposed to say that? Have they resigned themselves to losing this guy?
Great
especially
question.
If they feel he's too expensive.
I don't think it was a slip. What I think it was, though, was like a revealing moment that sort of showed you how Patrick and how this Canucks front office is going to view filling in, you know, what I think they see as glue guys on this team, right? Having size matters, having grit, having some scoring ability, having the ability to do what Joshua did this past season, penalty killing ability. I mean, all of that's going to matter, but there's a difference between the players you're going to be willing to overpay, right? Your Filip Hronek, top of the lineup, plays is a right-handed defenseman, is in his mid-20s, like has all those attributes where he's not just a fit short-term, but is a fit, you know, to sort of balance you out long term, where I think this club is going to be willing to spend. And then there's, you know, hey, he's a really big, really good, maybe he can play on our second pair. We probably like it better if he's on our third pair defenseman who all the fans love. Yeah, we'd love to keep him, but we have to hold firm on the line. You know, ultimately we see him as a middle six winger. Can he play second line? Maybe, but there's no guarantee. So we have to hold the line. We can't fall in love with sort of that tier of player. We need to be careful and disciplined. I think that's how you have to operate in the hard cap sort of era. But it does. You are. I think with it, from a Canucks perspective, in a pretty challenging spot, just because, you know, Zadorov wasn't just a third pair guy for this team in the playoffs. He was occasionally playing top pair minutes. Right. Yeah. Joshua was a top six forward. Elias Lindholm was a top six forward. That's a lot of like really crucial pieces that they're going to have to replace. They have the flexibility to do it. But, you know, you don't envy them over the next week. I'm sure it's going to be gut-wrenching for Canucks management.
Let me get this in. I think Patrick Helvin said that for a reason. I think Bone Joshua's number for a long, long, long time. They can't get there. If they got there, why are we at the 11th hour? I think he said that. I think he said that on purpose. That, look, we will develop the next Joshua. I think that was said because I think both sides were far apart at the time. And clearly, I can't report that there's anything close. So I think he said it for a reason.
And, you know, Rick, we've obviously heard their interest repeatedly in Jake Guentzel. Now, I know you've said maybe pump the brakes a little bit. We've heard from Elliot Friedman as well, him saying, you know, I don't know if Vancouver's going to be able to get it done. But whether it's Guentzel or not, you know, the fact that they haven't signed Zadorov, they haven't signed Joshua, they're being really careful about bringing these players back. Does that say to you that, again, whether it's Guentzel, whether it's something else, they're keeping this cap space open, not just because they don't want to make a mistake on those players, but because they want to have the room to go take a really big swing next week in free agency?
Exactly. Flexibility. They're going to have a ton of it. If they go into Monday without all these guys signed, they've got, what, 8 guys. Yeah, that's a lot of money, Donnie, they're going to have to play with on Monday. And don't rule out a trade this weekend, guys. Don't rule out, you know, Jim Rutherford, he likes to go and make some big news, big moves. They're going to be in Vegas all weekend. And don't tell me with all the other GMs there that there's not a possibility of the Canucks pulling off a big trade. You know that as well. So they're going to have the flexibility. You've got Rutherford there. You know he loves big moves. So don't rule out a trade this weekend either.
Rick, with Joshua and Zadorov, I think the club, you know, has sort of understood for a while that they'd be difficult to keep given the market prices. But Bluger and Myers sort of stand out for me here as guys that I'm going to be watching closely, obviously, before the market opens on July 1. Are you hearing anything there? Do you think there's optimism? I certainly know or was hearing about a week ago that in the wake of the club sort of accepting Lindholm's departure, that Bluger was going to become a greater priority. Any progress? Anything you're hearing on that front?
They're talking to Bluger's agent for sure. There's been multiple talks, but he's been kind of, you know, told also that, you know, there's bigger fish to fry, right? And, you know, I think that was the thing with Myers too. I think JP was told that, you know, Myers was so positive. Everything was positive, and now you're hearing and we're entering the 11th hour and you're kind of wondering what happened there. I don't know. It was so positive with Myers. JP came on our show, JP Barry, the agent, and said, we want to re-sign in Vancouver. And, you know, maybe they're out there looking at other right shot D for that second pair in the $2 to $3 million range. And maybe they could sign the guys. I don't know. But
good luck with that. But listening to your show yesterday, you guys, and earlier today before we came on, that's really interesting with Dylan DeMello and his numbers and his value in to Winnipeg in relation to Tyler Myers' value in Vancouver, $4.9 million a year.
Oh.
And I you know, when you said that, I almost drove off the road. But it kind of made sense that, you know, if Myers can get that kind of, that will take a lot of people, maybe even the Canucks themselves, by surprise. I don't think anybody would expect that. But you made the point, guys, yesterday, Jamie and Thomas, that he was a valuable player that's been liked by, very much so, three different coaches here in Vancouver. And I think maybe people were, I don't want to say delusional, but maybe dreaming, thinking that they're going to get him for like $1.5 million dollars.
Yeah, and
if they lose Myers, Joshua, and Zadorov, goodness, I mean, that's a ton of size. You know, those are Rick Tocchet type guys.
The Rick Tocchet type guys, but also the type of guys that this fan base has wanted for a long time, and people really enjoyed. You know, not just the success that the Canucks had, and relatively speaking, they did have success, but the way they went about having success. You know, old school, there was edge there, there was size, and people really enjoyed that. And also, I think what they enjoyed was that Rick Tocchet, you know this, Thomas, he basically begged for that type of defense.
That's it.
At the end of his first regular season, and they ended up getting it, and it really, really worked. And if they go away from that, I think people will be really disappointed.
It's sort of an odd thing that I'm going to be watching really closely, because I think the way that this team wants to play, Donnie, that you're talking about, is so specific. Mm-hmm. It requires so much speed along the wall, along the wings, right? Which kind of, if you're looking for top six forwards, means you're limiting the sorts of players that can be maximum, can hit their maximum level with you. And likewise, I think it works best with really big D. And so once again, whether they are able to keep this size in the lineup or not, like, they're going to need it if they're going to be as effective playing the way that they did as they were last season.
I get the attraction to the size, right? Because as you said, Donnie, like, Canucks fans have been waiting for so long for this, right? And we saw how effective it was. They had their most successful season in a long time. But I keep coming back to something else Patrick Galvin said repeatedly at his year-end availability, which was, this was only the second round. We need to get better, right? And he was very clear. And I have a hard time seeing how they get better if they prioritize just bringing pretty much the same team back and giving all of these guys raises. So, look, I get it. It would hurt to lose a big piece of the identity of your team. But if that's what it takes to go out and land a star player like Jake Guentzel or somebody on the trade market, I think you kind of have to bite the bullet and do it, and then try to find, you know, whether it's Brendan Dillon, or try to find the size and the toughness aspect somewhere else, because that's the only route I see to this team really taking that step forward, is adding that next star type player.
But you know, the answer to that for some people would be, okay, right, they didn't get past the second round, but they had this formula that I, as a fan, I really, really like. They didn't have Demko. What if they did? What if they did have Demko? What if they had Besser in that seventh game? Would we be talking about the Canucks, you know, getting to round three, maybe to a cup final? It's a really interesting predicament they're in right now.
And the other thing I want to say is next year this time, the Canucks do not want to be in this situation, 7, 8, 9 free agents again. Because I'll tell you what happened this year. These 7, 8 UFAs, them and their agents, all feel their clients played a big role in the Vancouver Canucks' best season in 13 years. So everyone's got, everyone other than Myers, everyone's got their hand out for a raise. And I just, I'm really surprised that they've built a team with this many UFAs. I don't think next year, this time next year, they should have 8 to 9 free agents. Like, this is going to be major turnover.
I don't think it worries Rutherford that much, though, or Alvin. But, like, I think Rutherford's totally comfortable saying, hey, I've got the flexibility. I'm going to go out and replace you guys. Like, I don't think this is Jim Benning losing to Foley and Markstrom and Tanev and being kind of surprised.
Tanev and Stetcher.
Yeah, and not having a backup plan. I think Jim Rutherford knew exactly what he was doing acquiring all these UFAs, and he's going to be comfortable going out and trying to replace them.
Yeah, there's a confidence there, a cockiness there with Rutherford.
Sure.
I think a lot of people like it.
I also
but
think
you,
it was
you
a
think
hedge.
Turning over 7, 8 guys is good?
No, but I think it was a hedge, Rick. Like, this was a team. You know, I actually did the work on this the other day. Can you believe that this franchise has not made the playoffs in consecutive seasons since 2012-2013? It's over a decade ago, right?
Yeah, so, I can believe it.
It shocked me. Honestly, I knew it, like, in my bones, but I was still stunned. So, you know, given the, what they'd inherited, Rick, I think they structured a team to be flexible. If it worked, they had their core locked up. If it didn't, they could change direction quickly as opposed to what they inherited, where it took them a year and a half to even begin to make progress because of how locked up they were into a whole host of inefficient contracts. So, you know, you're right. It is unfortunate that the team didn't have more of the upside that this club realized over the course of the season locked up. And you know, some of those pieces are now going to get significant raises. But I think it made sense last summer. I also think it makes sense to bet with a little more confidence on this group, given what they achieved last season this summer.
Oh, yeah. No, I was reading a text. I'm getting a text from
see
an
what I got to deal with all the
Rick
time.
Ever
I, was
getting, with
I guess I could have responded, too.
I was reading a text from an agent, and I wasn't listening to you, Thomas. I'm not going to lie to you.
Way to own it. Way to own it, Rick. But I'll say, like, look, Rick, I get what you're saying. I don't think they want to have all these UFAs again next
What's
year.
What's he saying? He just said he wasn't listening to anybody.
Earlier, his last answer. Rick, I understand
you don't want
that you like
you
big
don't
men
want
with soft hands.
Soft hands.
Yeah.
Hey,
gotta
Joshua,
have those soft hands.
Big guy.
There's nothing
soft
wrong
hands.
With that.
Big man, soft hands. There's nothing better. And you know
well,
what,
you
Thomas?
Need the big D, too, of course.
Can I give you some love, though, Rick? Can I give you some love? Every time
what?
You say big man
what?
With soft hands, I laugh. But what really yeah. gets me every time you do it is when you eventually go yeah. for hockey.
I'm clearly talking about hockey. What else would I be talking about, Thomas?
Any occupation.
Yeah.
Really? Can't go wrong. Big guy.
Even
big
in our
guy,
industry, big men with soft hands are good.
Yep. No doubt.
Don't know about that one. All right. I think that's as fitting a place as any to wrap it up. As I said, I this is going to be the
Perfect.
Last one of the year. It's been a blast doing this with guys. I think the listeners really like it. I know I really look forward to it. I assume Drance does as well. I don't want to speak for him.
I like mixing it up with you guys. It's the best.
It's a lot of fun. Thanks for doing this with us. I hope we can do it again next year. Have a
Love
great
it.
Summer, guys, and we'll talk soon.
Talk to Rick's agent.
All the best. Jeremy, I was going to call you Jeremy. Jamie, listen.
Yeah.
It was really a pleasure working with
Thank
you this
you,
year.
Rick.
I won't say the same to the... It was really good. We were at 6:50 when I got there before I got my ass canned. But anyways, it was fun working with you this year.
Appreciate
it. I agree, guys. This was a blast. Fantastic.
All right. That All right. is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly
I'll
on
call you
Check
later,
TV.
Rick.
Joining us for the crossover here on Canucks Talk. And again, the crossover brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles and where the players go. Donnie and Dolly, of course, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. And hopefully we'll be back doing the crossover again in the fall with those guys, because it was a blast. And as always, you can find the full episode or the full segment up on YouTube, on Sportsnet's YouTube channel as well. Okay, we will take a break here. Coming up next, we'll continue to dive into Canucks free agency, talk a little bit more about some of the notes that Rick had to pass along there, and take your text as well, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. This hour brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We're live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. All right, Jason Buchla coming up at 1 o'clock, but we got an open segment here, and lots of questions and comments about the Canucks offseason, what they might do coming into the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this one came in. Unsigned, the risk with putting all your eggs in one basket like Jake Guentzel is, what is the Canucks plan B when they lose out on him? And that, I think that's a very fair question, right? Like, what if you are structuring the way your behavior right now, right? Holding the line on all these internal unrestricted free agents so that you can go out and make a big push for Jake Guentzel when the market opens on Monday, and you don't get him, that has potential to, that has risk, that has up, that has downside for sure. But I think the thing is, any team building strategy and any strategy positioning yourself going into unrestricted free agency has risk, right? Like paying the price to sign all these guys and keep them here and not having the space to go after Jake Guentzel, that has risk as well, right? That limits what you're able to do. So you're right, it has risk. I think there are things they can do to mitigate that. I think they should absolutely have a ton of contingency plans in place for what they want to do. But I think the other thing is not giving yourself the opportunity to go after a star player like Jake Guentzel. That has a lot of risk and a lot of downside as well.
Well, the thing that I'd sort of respond with, right, conceptually, hypothetically, is, and I'll be curious to see if this plays out, because, you know, as we've talked about the offseason, as we've talked about the need to get not a top six winger, but a star level contributor, mm-hmm. right? There, it's an extremely hard thing to land. Maybe the hardest thing to add or graft onto your team is elite talent, period, regardless of position, right? I mean, when was the last time the Canucks added an elite player to this team not through the draft? It's JT Miller via trade, right? And even then, like, he wasn't acquired as an elite player, right? He developed into one and then, you know, kept improving from there, right? Like, the JT Miller that we saw that first year had an elite impact right away in Vancouver as, like, a two-way play-driving winger. He had another elite season a couple of years later as kind of a more one-dimensional point-producing center. And then this past year, produced the same way and leveled up as a two-way player. I mean, we've almost seen, like, three different iterations of JT Miller being mm-hmm. Being an exceptional talent. And so the you know, that's a rare story, right? Like, JT Miller is now a rare breed in terms of providing that impact. It's really tough. Like, it's really tough to add elite talent to the lineup. If you're going to do it, though, if you're serious about saying, hey, we don't need just like a goal scorer, we need an elite player. We need our answer to the Hyman Rantanen, Jason Robertson, Sam Reinhart, mm-hmm. you know, Artemi Panarin level winger that all the best teams in hockey seem to have, and that, you know, we probably don't right now, right? If you're going to go land that guy, I do think the approach of having cap space, right, is like step one. Step two is having tradable assets, right? Like, a lot of tradable assets. The Canucks don't have a ton of them, but they do have some premium ones, right? 2025 first, Lekera, Mackey, Volander, right? Like, that's it. But those are really significant. Those are, like, very significant assets. You know, if you're going to go about shopping for that, I do think this is kind of what it would look like, right, to this point. And I'm not saying that's the Canucks are going to sell out and sort of do it, but it's like, hold the line firmly on good but not core pieces ahead of the free agent market opening, right? Step one, if there's a free agent that matches the description, and this year there may be, that could change in an instant. We could get a press release from the Carolina Hurricanes, you know, in 2 minutes. We could see a trade.
For his rights.
For his rights. I mean, that could change extremely fluid at this time of year. But, you know, if there's a free agent that you can acquire without the acquisition cost, like, obviously that's going to be plan A. If that doesn't work, what's sort of plan B? Well, plan B is don't settle and overpay the guy who's, you know, the like no-name brand version. Be patient. Be disciplined in free agency. Preserve some of that cap flexibility. See what opportunities arise in a trade. Maybe place like a high volume of upside bets, hoping that you can get a breakout or sort of cobble together a facsimile of that contribution in the meantime. Consider going into the offseason with cap space, right? Certainly be aggressive, checking in on all of the various search situations that seem to be percolating around the league even as we speak. The Mitch Marner situation, the Nikolaj Ehlers situation, and on down the list. You just sort of go down the list from there. You know, that's what this would look like, right? Now, it's sort of an interesting thing where I'm almost reminded of the line from Captain America, the first one. Captain America, the First Avenger.
Sure.
You're not a big MCU guy, right?
No, I've seen all of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like can't think of the quote off the top of my head that you're about to reference here. That's for sure.
Okay, so it's Dr. Arnim Zola.
Sure.
You know who I'm talking about?
Classic character. I mean, vaguely.
He is a classic character. Everyone knows who Dr. Zola is. I guarantee you all our audience does. He's the German doctor who works with the Red Skull on developing the Tesseract weapons.
Of course. Go on.
He's being interrogated by Tommy Lee Jones, and he tells Tommy Lee Jones effectively about the insane plan that the Red Skull has for world domination or world destruction. And Tommy Lee Jones comments that it's an insane plan, and he says the sanity of the plan is of no consequence. Tommy Lee Jones says why, and he says because he can do it, right? So there's something a little backwards to me when I think about how most elite teams are built, with the idea of like building a really good team and then trying to graft that elite talent onto it that pushes it over the top. But we do see it done. Like we see that get done, and it's about sort of seizing the unique opportunities that come about. I don't think this team has like endless runway necessarily to do it. I do think that this team has to be conscious of maintaining the sort of win now pressure that has them, you know, not picking till 93rd at the NHL entry draft, right? And there's so many ways in which this team is set up for the here and now and not sort of taking a medium or even long-term view of it. But if the piece you really feel like you need to make sure that you're armed appropriately the next time you bump into Dreisaitl and McDavid in a playoff series is an elite piece, you know, you go into free agency with space. You try to find that guy in free agency. If he does not move in free agency to you, if you do not land the guy, then there's still opportunities out there, provided that you're patient and disciplined and sort of wait for the situations to come to you, the situations to devolve between star players and their current teams, or, you know, a team with an elite player who's on an expiring contract, extension talks aren't going anywhere, you know, that sort of goes south. I mean, the Tomáš Hertl acquisition for Vegas, the Hanifin acquisition for Vegas. Obviously, Eichel stands out. We see Vegas do this like twice a year. Mark Stone, right? Yep. On and on. These situations do shake loose. We've seen cup winners built like this. Tkachuk is a perfect example. Reinhardt's a really good example, right? You just sort of wait. Put yourself in that market by preserving cap space and being willing to move the premium assets required. You know, if that's what they do here, right? If that's truly the judgment call and that's how they go about doing it, I'm not saying that they are. I think this team wants to maintain the momentum that they built last season, you know, above all else. But if that's how they approach this, it's probably going to be frustrating, and they'll take their arrows on July 2nd, July 3rd, July 4th, July 5th. But continuing to tweak this team in seasons, like a strength of this management group, right? Being efficient in your player evaluation, especially your pro player evaluation, I think is a strength of this management group. Leaning into that, I think can pay dividends if you're super focused on adding that top of the lineup piece.
A couple of texts, good texts came in here that I want to read together. One, and this is going back to the discussion we were having with Donnie and Dolly in the crossover. This one, unsigned, just says, as a fan, I don't think it matters how you get it done, size or not, just build a contender. And then Connor at UBC texts in, the Jeff Skinner discussion got me thinking about the skill versus talk it guy axis for players. How skilled would a potential top six add have to be for you to be okay with the risk of them not being as much of a physical, forechecking, defensively responsible type? Thanks. That's Connor at UBC. I think that's a really interesting question, right? Because I think it's easy to look at Jeff Skinner as a potential fit in terms of his goal scoring ability, right? If he's a plan B, if you don't get Jake Guentzel. But then there's also the issue you raised, right? Like Andre Kuzmenko had plenty of skill, but it just was not going to work with him and Rick Tocchet. And we talked a lot after the end of the season, right? And you kind of shot down the idea that there needed to be like a tactical tweak from Rick Tocchet, which I think is fair, but I do wonder how much they do need to just, okay, look, we have this identity we want to play to. We have this style of play that relies on physicality, that relies on speed, all of those things. Do you need to bend just a little bit, not on the tactical side of things, but on the personnel side of things, to get a higher level of skill? If it means getting a difference-making type of player in the door and on the team. I think it's an interesting question, right? Like, where does the guy need to be on that axis of skill versus talk it type for him to be a fit?
I mean, I think he has to be able to play the way that this team plays. You know, like fundamentally, I think he has to be able to do that. Like, I don't think you can compromise on that. Here's why, right? Okay. You can't compromise on that because there's a lot of players on this Canucks team who didn't always play Rick Tocchet hockey.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So it's like, if you told me the way that we'd be talking about JT Miller's defensive game after 120 games under Rick Tocchet, midway through, you know, his second season with Bruce Boudreau, I would never have believed you. Never, right? If you were to tell me that Brock Besser's two-way game had bounced back from where it was in 2022-23, I would have said, yeah, I expect that. Now, if you were to tell me how significantly it bounced back, right? That he'd become, you know, a really, really sharp, mm-hmm. battle-winning ace defensive winger, capable of not just holding up in a matchup role the way he has been through most of his career, but like really making a meal of it, I might not have believed you, right? So how do you, if you've asked your JT Miller
yep.
level players to make that sacrifice, right, to buy into the idea that if you play the right way, right, if you don't care about your individual stats and your individual contributions and the fun stuff, and you do the work, you're actually going to score more secretly. But more importantly, you're going to get a chance to do the fun stuff, which is play at the end of the year, which is play in the most meaningful games. If you've asked that of your best players, you can't possibly bend on that for Jeff Skinner.
For UFA guy you just signed.
No.
Who's coming in fresh.
No, yeah. like that's the thing. It's not about bending for one guy. It's about how you play as a team. It's about the fact that if you all play a specific way and buy into, you know, managing the puck conservatively the way that this Canucks team does and really avoiding those turnovers when you first enter, like first cross the blue line, right? And, you know, back check and maintain that level of intensity mm-hmm. In terms of your skating speed and the short shifts and, you know, changing like it matters. Like all of that stuff, all of that ephemeral stuff that matters so much for how this team succeeded this past year. I think if you compromise on that, like if you give an inch, it's kind of over. It falls apart really quickly. So yeah, are you going to play cult-like Rick Tocchet hockey? And if you are, and you're going to score enough, you need more skill in this lineup, that skill better be able to play that way.
Yeah, and I guess the other way to frame that question is, how much are you willing to bet on bringing a player in who doesn't necessarily have that reputation or have that type of play style in their past and bet that you can make them do it, that you can get them to do it? Because I think it's a fair right. point that you bring up. Like, you could have looked at plenty of guys on the Canucks and said, oh, they're not really that type of player. But Rick Tocchet has gotten them to be that type of player. Didn't work with Andre Kuzmenko. And I think the Kuzmenko example is really good. Like, I think Tocchet, in retrospect, played that perfectly. He did not bend. He did not compromise for Andre Kuzmenko. The team controlled play. They didn't have the same record after they traded him, but they controlled play at a higher level after they traded Andre Kuzmenko. And I think that was a win for Rick Tocchet, the fact that he didn't compromise. So I'm not sitting here saying all of a sudden they should bend their principles and, oh, if you can go get, you know, flashy winger X, you let them do whatever you want. But I just think it's an interesting needle to thread, and maybe it just comes down to you're going to have to make a bet. You're going to have to take a risk on acquiring a player who we don't think of as a Rick Tocchet type and turn him into a Rick Tocchet type.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe there's like a Mendoza line for this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and maybe we could find it. Like, here's one that would I think is an interesting one to consider. David Perron, okay, on an affordable one-year deal. So David Perron plays super hard, right? Like, super hard. Super intelligent, still productive, had almost 50 points last year, 17 goals, 30 assists, right? Still probably a true talent second line forward. Absolutely at this stage of his career does not have the foot speed to play Rick Tocchet hockey. To you know, skate like strong side and establish the way that the Canucks want to on the back check, for example. That would be a struggle for him. Certainly being F1 on the forecheck with the way that this Canucks team wants to attack puck-carrying defensemen, I don't think he's going to be a plus contributor in that area. But David Perron's really good. Would that guy pass the test?
I don't think so, because I don't think he has the needle-moving qualities. Right? Because this is the kind of thing. If you have the areas of concern on your Rick Tocchet's identity, right, then you better be really, really moving the needle in the other categories. And I like David Perron. And if there was like an affordable one-year deal and you were bringing him in, you know, as a third liner or something like that, I think that could be a really interesting acquisition. But I don't know if you're extending yourself at all to make that bet, right? Because it's concerns on both. It's not like if you go sign David Perron to play next to Elias Pettersson, that you still have major doubts in your top six then, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's fair. And then there's a lot of guys who I think sort of fit the way that this team wants to play that aren't necessarily needle movers. And how do you factor them into this equation? So like Chandler Stephenson and Teuvo Teravainen stand out to me as like fast, reliable wingers, right? Like really sharp defensively. If Teravainen can play Carolina Hurricane style stress hockey, that basically mints you.
Sure.
As a Rick
Tocchet. You can do Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, because there's certainly some similar hallmarks. It's not quite as extreme or rigid. And then Chandler Stephenson with the speed, the defensive reliability, all of that. I mean, you can see it in your mind's eye. Like, there's a lot of Lafferty in his game, you know, with better hands and versatility and on and on. So how do you then think of it?
I think that's an interesting question as a plan B, right? If you miss out on the high end star, can you get more than the sum of the parts if you find guys who are really good fits, right? You know, who are like, okay, we know exactly how they're going to play Rick Tocchet hockey, and they have more upside than, you know, obviously like a guy like Sam Lafferty or you know, an Ilya Mikheyev who is playing top 6 minutes. And maybe you don't look at the signings as impact guys on day one, but because of their fit, you can get more out of them. That wouldn't necessarily be my first choice. I think it would very, very much be a plan B or C type of thing. But I can at least see the argument there because you have been so strong on that identity and building that identity, and it's had so much success. So I don't know. I think that's an interesting thought experiment as a potential pivot option for them if they're not able to get Jake Guentzel.
Yeah, I just don't think this team can count on getting the best out of any one-dimensional wingers. Like, I really think you need to be able to, at the very least, be a Garland-type buzzsaw as a two-way winger. Like, at the very least, be, you know, trusted. Like, I think Hoglander is, like, almost at, like, the very bottom end of, like, what you can tolerate or what Tocchet's going to tolerate in a way that he still empowers the player. And even there, we saw the seams. And like Hoglander's work rate literally never flags, right? It's just like small defensive details. And even that's enough for us to sort of side-eye the level of opportunity from time to time over the course of the season.
Okay, we'll take a break. Jason Bukala joins us next here, as he does every Wednesday. Keep your texts coming in. More Canucks talk coming up on Sportsnet 650.